98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
The Suns play a big game tonight in downtown Phoenix, and that's because it's a big game to the opponent. Knicks star Julius Randle even said the Knicks have had this game circled ever since the Suns came back from 15 down to win at Madison Square Garden. It's a big game because it will give us some insight into the fundamental question hovering over the last three games. Are the Suns fatigued, or were they just tired in Atlanta? Maybe you heard our guy Amin El-Hassan earlier today and his analogy about load management and how he intimated the Suns might have made a key tactical error along the way in refusing the lure of load management. Now, I'm not going to fault Monty Williams because I think Chris Paul is the one who needs it the most and the one who wants it the least. But there are some questions lingering from what we've seen in two close wins over bad teams, followed by their worst loss of the season. A rocking performance tonight would also go a long way in reassuring me and many other Suns fans. It will give us some insight into what the Suns arena might sound like in the playoffs and how loud it can get at 50% capacity. And it's also a big game because we don't want to feel like number two after being number one. Today's Bickley Blast, brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. You can test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler, at Chapman BMW on Campbellback. You can shop online at ChapmanBMW.com.
You teed that up nicely to begin this discussion.
He clearly wasn't listening because he would have been laughing by now.
No, but there's one thing I know about it, feeling like number two.
there is this fundamental question that I think I heard for the very first time on Burns and Gamble yesterday. So props to those guys for framing the story very accurately and profoundly. Are they tired, or were they just tired from playing the back end of a back-to-back in Atlanta? Tonight can go a long way in soothing those concerns, if you will.
I agree. I'm leaning towards, and I might be completely wrong, I'm leaning toward that they were tired in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
That they fell behind by double digits against Atlanta in the third quarter, and the wheels came off, and it got disastrous. But I think a lot of the wear and tear from the previous two games that, quite honestly, the Suns, if that's what happened, the Suns have nowhere else to look but in the mirror, because you shouldn't have to hang on for dear life against Oklahoma City.
No.
You shouldn't have to go an extra 5 minutes, even though you dominated those 5 minutes against a bunch of guys in Cleveland Cavaliers uniform. So, again, the responsibility ultimately lies with them. Yeah. I do believe that we'll see a different Suns team tonight. Not to say that you're not going to see an energized New York Knicks team. They want to bounce back after getting beat by Denver the other night. And they're playing for something, too. But, I might be completely wrong. I hope I'm not wrong, because I would hate for what the Suns have accomplished to this point be derailed this late in the regular season because real fatigue is set
in. Yeah, that's exactly right. And there's a lot of Eddie Johnson in our interview with EJ. He brought a different level of fatigue, the mental fatigue that once this team starts playing playoff games, everything will lock back in. I want to believe that very badly. I want to believe that the Suns have chosen not to play defense at the intensity that they do against good teams when they play bad teams, for the reason that they're mentally tired, that they're ready for the playoffs and they just want to get there so badly, but they can't quite get themselves to that level against the Cavaliers and teams like that. Okay, that's possible as well. The idea that possibly this team made an error in not taking fines and resting guys and that kind of thing, it's an interesting dilemma. I know nobody wants to look that in the face, because I've been applauding their approach, but I've also been very cognizant of, if everybody else is indulging in this heinous act of load management and you're not, are you smart or are you stupid?
Well, the subject of load management came up when we had Amin El-Hassan on, and he gave a pretty good analogy of why it makes sense.
Imagine we all lived in a building back in the 1800s, and we lived on the seventh floor of this building. For us to get to our apartments on the seventh floor, how would we get there? You got to take the stairs, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no other way. And then one day they invent an elevator. And now our building has an elevator in it, but you're still insistent on taking the stairs. You can do that, and everyone's going to say, wow, he's really about his fitness and all that stuff, but there's going to come a time where we're going to compete in something, and I'm going to be fresh and full of energy because I've been taking the elevator, and you're going to be tired and sluggish because you've been taking the stairs. While it is admirable that you took the stairs this whole time, at some point, it's kind of ridiculous. You are putting yourself willingly at a disadvantage against everybody else because this isn't golf. You're not competing against yourself. You're competing against people who are trying to get this done against you.
Okay. What we can all agree on, and I think it's a fascinating way to look at it. We can all agree that the elevator was a life-changing invention for all of us.
Uh-huh.
Is load
Especially the Otis Company.
Is load management the equivalent, the basketball equivalent of the elevator?
That's the fundamental question.
Because if it was, I think it would have happened a lot sooner than it did. And for me, from the outside, I mean, it's a very rudimentary way to look at things. But if you are a highly paid professional athlete, your job is to be in shape.
Mm-hmm.
But injuries will always happen.
The difference is today's modern athletes make so much money that they all now spend money to keep themselves in the game of professional sports. And that means your own chef, nutritionist. It means personal trainers. It means psychologists. It can mean a whole bunch of things.
Mm-hmm.
Hyperbaric chambers, cold tubs, all sorts of things players invest in. One of the things that they invest in are life coaches, people who are their trainers and the like. And one of the big movements in sports in the last 10 years has been rest, sleep.
I mean,
and
you can have both. A practice is how long? A couple hours?
Mm-hmm.
How many practices do you think every NBA team is having at this time of the year?
Not many.
Games are what? 2 hours, 20 minutes? It's 24 hours in a day still.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Again, I'm admitting this is an old school way to look at
mm-hmm.
it. And the reason why I'm not full, and again, I was intrigued by Amin's example, but the reason why I'm not totally on board with it yet is because we don't have anything to base it on. If this was the Sun's second go-around, let's say we're having this discussion going into the playoffs next year with this largely the same group of guys, and the Suns attacked this year the way they have in terms of healthy players playing as much as possible and maybe, in some people's opinion, too much, and they broke down in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
and they chose to do it that way again, obviously that would be foolish.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know. We don't know what this is going to look like. Nobody does.
No. You're right. You're right about that. I just wonder also exactly if the information is accurate, if the benefits of load management really amount to something. The James Harden example I completely forgot about because James Harden was a guy who insisted on logging heavy minutes
mm-hmm.
and not load managing. And yet his teams never got over the hump. In fact, at the end of those series, a couple of those series, particularly the one against Golden State, they were smoked by the end of it.
They were. And here was Amin El-Hassan using those recent Rockets teams as a cautionary tale for the Suns.
You have to look no further than the Houston Rockets and James Harden about this.
Oh, that's
James
right.
Harden was routinely 38, 39 minutes, 81, 82 games played. I don't think he dipped below 73 in any season in Houston that wasn't shortened by COVID. Ask him how he felt by the time he got to the playoffs.
Yeah.
See how he looked against San Antonio, against Golden State, against whatever team bounced the Houston Rockets out of the playoffs. He always looked tired. And you know what people said? They didn't say, he's tired because he played all those minutes and all those games while everybody else is resting. They said, he's not clutch. He does not. They made it a character assassination on him. But the reality was, he's playing the game with a different set of rules than everybody else was. And so, you know, if you're the Suns and you're going through what you're going through and Monty has a strategy, you have to ask yourself, that's great for now, but when we get to the real thing, is that going to help us?
I mean, somebody mm-hmm. very cynical could argue James Harden has been load managing on the defensive end for the last decade. Does that count?
Yeah, okay. That's a fair point, too.
But here's where it gets really fuzzy for a lot of people. The idea of load management and the importance of rest and recovery is at its ground level counter to what Americans have been conditioned to think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
This is a country that was founded on the idea of hard work. I watched a documentary a few years ago. It was a Michael Moore documentary where he went to different places in the world and wanted to steal things to take back to America from all of these. And I believe it was Italy. And their liberal vacation policies.
Oh, yeah.
Were basically, hey, if you're feeling tired, take some time off. If you're feeling tired, go home and sleep in the middle of the day. It's so counter to what Americans have been taught for so long. So right now, you know, sports fans who are still working under these conditions, hey, you get two weeks of vacation, do with them what you want. The idea of load management is a hard concept
to
grasp.
That's a great point. That's a really good point.
Do you think we would be better talk show hosts if we had more rest?
There's no doubt about it.
Well, here's the other, the big...
I think I'm speaking for the entire platoon when we should postpone this
run
to be better rested.
Postponed.
Yeah.
To me, the biggest problem...
That private Carl Spackler.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. He does one...
You're right. I did.
He does
I
one don't... Bill Murray, but...
Right, that's all. You're right.
It's hard to do just the regulation
it
Bill
is.
Murray. So
Winger is a hard impression.
We give him a little slack. The hardest thing with the Suns in this entire argument to me is...
Uh-huh.
They repeatedly, for now, almost the entire season, have struggled against the bad teams. So when you look at it that way, and you say, when would they have load managed? They needed their entire teams just to beat these bad teams sometimes. And if the goal really was to try to get the best seed possible, it's hard to say they should have load managed any way across the thing without giving away games.
Yeah, which, to your point, again, a failure of sorts that they were asked to play too many fourth quarter minutes against bad teams because they were still trying to pull out wins. And in a lot of those cases, they did pull out wins, but the failure to put games away comfortably enough to where you couldn't rest. I mean, it's been pretty few and far between where you get Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Chris Paul all on the bench in the fourth quarter.
Or even like that Cleveland Cavaliers game. That would have been the perfect game to say, okay, Booker and Paul are sitting that game because it's the first half of a back-to-back on the road, and we could probably beat Cleveland without those two guys, you know? But they probably wouldn't have beat Cleveland without those two guys. So then you say, like, how could they have rested them when every game counts, you know, when you're that close to the number one seed? So I don't know how they could have done load management without sacrificing wins with the way the season played out.
I agree with that. But then it turns into the big question. Would you rather have the higher seed or be more well-rested?
Yeah.
Nobody knows the answer to that question
at
this
right.
point.
You're right. And again, it's you don't want any regrets. You don't want to make mountains out of molehills. But I do think what we've seen the last few days is it's just I really hope that, as I said earlier, they're just not kind of losing their grip for whatever reason. I hope that whatever it is that we've seen the last few games was just something very, very temporary. As it looks now, you win tonight and you've got five games left after that. By my thinking, you need 3 to 4 wins to retain the number two seed. Because you got a 2-game lead, 2.5-game lead on the Clippers right now for it?
Yeah.
Okay. So that to me is, I don't know if you're going to get number one again, given the quality of your schedule and given the fact that Utah's schedule is much easier. The Clippers' schedule is cake going out. They don't play again until Sunday, I think. And their list of opponents far inferior to the Suns. So that's why tonight's game is also very important. I don't think you want to slip down to 3. Maybe you do. I don't know.
Well, here's the other thing about the Suns is that the players you would think that would most need load management, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, they're the ones that are actually still playing about as good as they've played all season.
Yes.
It's sort of the supporting guys that were really helping the team, the Cam Johnsons, DeAndre Ayton.
Dario Saric. Mikal Bridges at a certain point.
Yeah, and Jay Crowder's been injured now. It's like those are the guys actually that we need to step back up to their normal level.
I don't know if you saw this, too. A fan tweeted out to Jay Crowder, can't wait to see you back out there hooping for us. And he responded and said, your wish will be granted tonight.
Really?
Wow. I thought Jay Crowder
thought he was ruled out, is what I heard on the updates.
Maybe that's changing. I'm just, you know.
His injury is a bad thing.
That's been a longer lingering injury than I thought when he first got injured.
But that's where I think you're seeing also maybe some tinges of load management brought into that scenario.
That's
Jay Crowder, a guy who plays heavy playoff minutes. We know that. He certainly did. Played a big part for Miami last year. Legitimate injury. Why rush him back?
Mm-hmm.
So we might be seeing elements of it, just not a complete full-on, here we go with load management.
Yeah. Well, it's true. And maybe that's a smart thing, too. You look at LeBron and that ankle, you could say that they didn't give him enough rest, but they knew they had lost 6 of 7. They were slipping. They come back, and now the whole thing is spinning. Yeah, it's fascinating. These are first-class problems to have.
Oh, yeah.
But this is what's really cool. This is what's exciting. This is why it's serious to me, because they're playing for a championship.
Yeah, normally, I mean, in the last decade, a lot of times when you get to this point in your schedule and you're following the Suns, you're getting to see a lot of the young players play a lot of minutes because the guys that were in the starting lineup are in street clothes for various reasons. I'll take this every time.
Yeah.
Text bonus right now to 620-620 and listen for your name this afternoon at 1:35 to win $500. That's bonus, B-O-N-U-S. 620-620. It's the Arizona Sports signing bonus.
I like them both. Collins is one of my favorites in the draft because I think that he's... We always try and find the new style and this guy's different and all that. He actually looks more old school middle linebacker by his size, but he plays more like he can be an edge guy. You know, like when you turn on his tape, you feel like every time he gets around the football, he takes it and goes the other direction. You know, he's a ball magnet, and you absolutely love that. And he comes up big and big time spots. The way he finished off, you know, I think the UCF game, and you just go right on down the line. I really like that kid. He was one of my favorites in the first round.
That's Charles Davis from our show earlier in the week talking about Zaven Collins, first round pick, 16th overall of the Arizona Cardinals. And, you know, we're a week away from the draft. Jarrett brought it up in the show prep meeting, and he couldn't be more right. It seems like it was so much longer ago than a week. But I've gone through, like, different cycles, and for anybody that listened to our draft coverage on that Thursday night of the first round, you know, my stance was, I like the player, I don't necessarily like the pick for the Cardinals.
Okay.
Because we had those questions of exactly what Zaven Collins is.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cardinals have answered those questions quite succinctly, at least verbally. He's a Mike linebacker. We are not going to move him around, indicating they've learned their lesson from you know, previous years. Hassan Reddick and Isaiah Simmons being the two most recent examples. So that's reassuring. But then you go through this cycle, this part of the cycle where we're so far away from seeing what the player looks like in the scheme. You were talking about it earlier with the pieces that the Cardinals have added on defense.
Yeah.
There's a different edge. There should be a different edge to this defense. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to see what it looks like, especially, you know, one of those big pieces is Zaven Collins.
Listen, when you can get yourself very excited when you start thinking about what this defense might look like compared to what we've seen in the past. And what we've seen in the past was a defense that had some playmakers but didn't really have a lot of physicality and certainly didn't impose themselves on the opponent. You know, when you go into Pittsburgh to play the Steelers or the Ravens or the Titans, there are certain teams that you know you're going to be, you just know you've got that kind of trepidation, and the Cardinals have never struck me as that team. 49ers have been that team, but this helps. So when you've got J.J. Watt, Chandler Jones as your edge pass rushers, and then you've got these two young hulking linebackers in the middle, providing they can play, and then you've got a defensive back, a secondary that features Malcolm Butler and Buda Baker and others, now you've got some real pop. And if this Zaven Collins kid, if he can cover in the NFL the way he covered in college, we know he can hit. He's a big dude. And that changes that changes not only the defense, it changes the way opposing offenses feel when they play. They're not going to be a lot of comfort, you know? Now, we're assuming J.J. Watt's got a lot left in the tank. We're assuming that Isaiah Simmons is going to make a big step up. We're assuming Zaven Collins is actually going to be able to start from day one. And it's very interesting what that says about Jordan Hicks, because if you are Jordan Hicks, how are you processing this right now? Like, my job's just taken to me by a rook?
Yeah, I mean, he did agree to the pay cut. We did see a decrease in production from his first year in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear it all the time. We know this is a business. Again, I think he could still be a valuable piece as a mentor, as a depth guy, if Zaven Collins is going to be the guy. But there's a lot that has to happen for Zaven Collins to be a day one starter for the Cardinals. There's a lot of excitement around the league, too, about Collins, his skill set, how it translates to the defense. If you don't believe me, ask Bart Scott from ESPN.
I'm going to go with the best linebacker in the draft and arguably the best defensive player in this draft. I'm going Zaven Collins. Zaven Collins right here is a throwback to Urlacher. He's also a throwback to, I believe, Luke Kuechly. He's the most dominant defensive player that was in this draft. He can affect on every single aspect of the game. He can blitz. He can play great pass defense. And I think that's exactly what they needed in Arizona, because you look at it. Traditionally, you know, Isaiah Simmons is not a traditional linebacker. This is your thumper. This is your captain. This is the guy that's going to get lined up, and this is the guy that's going to impact the league and going to take it by storm. And in short order, he'll be one of the best linebackers, if not the best, in short order. We see Devin White. We saw David, you know, dominate the Super Bowl. He's next in line.
Yeah, when you go back and look at some of the highlights and what Charles Davis said in the soundbite that we played as an introduction to this conversation, I mean, he did make plays you don't see linebackers normally make. His pass coverage skills are extraordinary. He had a walk-off pick six last year in overtime, and he took it back 96 yards.
Yeah,
for a guy that weighed in at 270 in the Indy medical checkups. You don't see that very often.
No, that is true. Yeah.
And if the attitude or the play matches the attitude.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah. And it's just, I mean, how likable was that whole draft day deal?
Oh, it was up there.
I mean, it was, I think you saw this about Zaven Collins, that no player in the NFL draft increased their Instagram followers more than Zaven Collins. Or should we just start calling him Zavian?
No, I think Zaven.
I think Zaven works.
ZC.
Yeah. So there were a few players because of, you know, things that happened. That moment, the phone call with Steve Keim was so viral and so endearing. And Zaven Collins was largely just a regional player. Probably a lot of college football or a lot of college football fans didn't really know him. Flocked to his Instagram account.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. Cool.
Zay Call. That's what we'll call him on the show.
Right.
No.
No,
yeah,
it's not.
That's right up there with Bo Mel.
Yeah, I was never a big fan of that either.
Apropos of nothing, I'm saying what's on my mind because it's been
it's
on
Friday,
the, in
man.
The studio.
Yeah,
the Pirates are playing the Cubs at Wrigley, and I don't know why I've been so shaken by this, but Trevor Cahill is still pitching in the major leagues. If you consider the Pittsburgh Pirates a major league team, Trevor Cahill is still pitching.
Said that,
and
you're shaken by it.
He has not changed physically. His appearance hasn't changed one bit.
Yeah.
He has not changed physically since the day he was born. He looks like a giant baby.
He does. I had a radio partner once who described Trevor Cahill as looking like a Cabbage Patch Kid.
Yeah, I remember that. And he did.
He did. The Western Conference playoffs will be interesting, but there's a lot to be determined before we get to the postseason. Take a look at some of the teams in battle with the Suns for positioning next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Just what I said. You know, we're going to get teams best. And, you know, we have to be ready for that every night. But I think it's good for us, you know, going across these challenges and, you know, taking this road trip. But it's time for us to get back west. I'm still on the road, a lot of games, but, you know, we know what it takes. and I'm excited about the rest of the season.
It's Devin Booker following the loss to Atlanta the other night. Suns back home, one of their last two home games against the New York Knicks. Then they go on the road for two. Then they're back for a game against Portland. Then they end the season with those back-to-back games in San Antonio.
Move on. Just ignore it.
I can't. It drives me crazy. Tonight is a pretty pivotal night in the Western Conference, potentially.
It is.
You got the Suns playing an Eastern Conference opponent, but when you look at the team that's above the Suns in the Western Conference right now, the Utah Jazz, they get a tough one against Denver.
They do.
And then you get the Lakers and Portland. They're going head-to-head with identical records tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And what we saw from the Lakers again last night was, hey, look, Anthony Davis getting hurt again.
Uh-huh.
He took a shot. He backed up a little bit too far, ran into the scorer's table, kind of backed into the scorer's table, played only 9 minutes. It looked like an ankle injury. They said it was back spasms. Here was Davis after the game.
Yeah, the ankle was fine. Tweaked it, but it wasn't bothering me. The back locked up pretty bad, so that's it. I couldn't really move. Feels a little better now, and see how it is tomorrow.
I mean, then he says this.
I should be good to go tomorrow based on how it's feeling now. But, yeah, I mean, still wake up and test it out. But my plan is to go tomorrow.
I mean, that flies in the face of everything we know about today's NBA and the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah.
And Anthony Davis specifically.
Uh-huh. But the Lakers are in danger of being in the play-in tournament. Do you know how dangerous that is for them? In a one-game scenario, if LeBron has had no practice time and Anthony Davis keeps in and out. And
getting attacked by scorer's table?
Right. And like you said, Vinny, when Anthony Davis came back after missing 30-plus games, he hasn't exactly been good.
No, I was reading Plaschke's column today from the LA Times, where says, let me find the exact passage. The numbers are surreal. The Lakers are 2-6 since Davis has returned and have been outscored by 63 points when Davis has been on the court. Yeah, a minus 63. He's averaging 16 points and 6 rebounds, and none of it is nearly enough.
Wow.
I think they lost both games when LeBron came back, too, right?
They did. Two not-so-good teams. Here was Anthony Davis talking about the play-in tournament possibilities.
I mean, we don't look at it as something bad. To be honest, we need a lot of games. We need games to get back accustomed to each other anyway. So, I mean, if it happens that way, it happens that way. You know, obviously we don't want to go that route, but if it happens, it happens. And we're going to win games in the play-in and then get ready for whoever we play, first round and take care of business from there. So,
tonight would mark the first night where we would see the Lakers. The Lakers lose to Portland, they dip to 7. The Blazers would leapfrog them.
Yes,
and
they would
be temporarily in that safe space of number 6.
Uh-huh.
And then your play-in tournament would look like this. Lakers versus Golden State and Memphis against San Antonio with 2 spots on the line.
Watch
We've
out, Lakers.
We talked about the possibility of the Lakers, regardless of where you're playing, with what Steph Curry's been doing lately, that's the last team anybody would want to see in a one-game scenario.
Exactly. But, okay, now let's think about this. If the Lakers do fall into that, there's also the odds they sit at the 7, that they get through that they win that game and just lock up the 7, boom, like that. Then it's, right?
The other thing that could happen, though, is Golden State's only a half game ahead of Memphis right now. So Memphis could leapfrog Golden State. And even if the Lakers are in 7, they would take on the Grizzlies at 8. So there's still a lot of jockeying to do.
If you were the Phoenix Suns, okay, and you kind of saw towards going into the last game of the season, maybe the last two, that it looked like the Lakers were going to be slotted at 7, may not survive the play-in format, may survive it. Would you want to move down to 3 and tank a couple of games? Now, I'm just speaking theoretically here. Would you prefer a 3-6 matchup versus wounded Lakers?
Or not the Lakers.
They're not the Lakers.
There's one team. There's one team I don't want to see in the first round, and it's impossible for it to happen, and that's the Clippers.
Okay.
I say bring anybody else on.
Okay. That's a good attitude
and,
to have.
And if Anthony Davis is shaken confidence-wise, if healthy enough to play, and LeBron James is coming off a gimpy ankle, which has bothered him for 6 weeks now, bring him on.
That would... That would fire up the playoffs immediately, wouldn't it?
Yes.
If after 11 years, you get a first-round matchup with the Lakers?
Here's Charles Barkley last night on TNT, kind of intimating what we're talking about, too. But the Lakers in a play-in game series?
Listen, the notion that they're just going to show up, let's be realistic. They could play the Warriors. They could play the Blazers. They could play the Mavs. So the notion that they even New Orleans, I told you, New Orleans to me is the team that overachieved the most.
Underachieved.
But the notion that the Lakers can just show up and beat New Orleans, Dallas, or Portland, I don't like their chances.
Memphis and San Antonio in that mix, too. And that is true. I mean, Dallas is in the 5 seed right now, but they're only a game above the Lakers. So those spots from 5 all the way down to 11 really could be shuffled between now and the end of the regular season.
Say what you will about this ridiculous play-in tournament.
Mm-hmm.
It actually is adding intrigue to the end of the season.
Definitely intrigue, yeah.
And all these discussions about where you want to finish.
Like I said, I love it as long as the Suns don't have to be part of it.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
It's like the double reverse of like LeBron probably loved it until he was like, wait a minute, what the hell? We got to play in it? And Monty Williams was probably not a big fan of it. And then now...
You think about our experiences with it. The Suns went to the bubble. And even though they didn't win the play-in format to get into the playoffs... They had the perfect building block. They didn't go off and play somebody in the first round and get run out of the gym. The season ended as a what if.
Mm-hmm.
What if we would have gotten in? Nobody would have wanted to play us. We were 8-0 in the bubble.
Yeah.
Okay? So it worked. I would say it worked last year, set the foundation for everything. And then you've got this year that the Suns have leapfrogged this madness entirely. And we would. I really would have thought that maybe in years past, if... You would have said to a Suns fan, okay, look, your drought's coming to an end. I'll tell you that much. But we're also doing this play-in format. I think that would have caused anxiety here because we would have all assumed that when the Suns got back to the playoffs, it would have been as an 8th seed. It would have been as a 7th seed.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been just barely in, and we'd have to go through that. And it hasn't happened, so I'm good with this.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly fine with it.
I'm fine with it, too.
And you know what else we might see, Vinny,
what?
In the playoffs? A Luka Doncic who isn't complaining.
Maybe. He actually acknowledged it last night getting interviewed by Ernie Johnson of TNT.
With Dwight Howard tied for the most technical fouls with 15, and if you get one more, you get suspended a game. Over your last 6, how are you going to remain Luka and play to a high level, but also not let your emotions get out of control?
Yeah, for sure. You know, this season has been long. You know, I with official, I wasn't myself this season. You know, I'm complaining way too much, and I got to work on that. You know, and I just got to stay calm and just not talk to them. I got to learn from that.
Easier said than done.
Yeah, listen, if I could make one change to basketball, I mean this sincerely. Well, put it this way. If we had to stick with the current level of NBA officiating, which I know you absolutely love, you're enamored with the level of officiating in the NBA.
I think it's a really hard sport to officiate, I think it's made more difficult.
I wish there was a rule in place that it was sort of like you don't argue balls and strikes with umpires or they can run you immediately. I wish you could get to a place, and I don't know how you do it, but I wish you could get to the place in an NBA where players were either taught or... There were structures in place that took all the complaining out of the game.
Well, good luck.
I know. I would love that.
But I mean, even though they cracked down on Major League Baseball, I still see players arguing balls and strikes all the time. Usually when Angel Hernandez is behind the plate.
Listen, the thing I don't like about it is the excessive complaining leads to persecution complexes among your fan base, leads to crowds, you know, feeling a certain way. It breeds a lot of animosity and brings a lot of animosity to the sport of basketball. That's all.
Well,
it's just a pie in the sky wish that I've had for a while.
Again, it just comes down to better officiating. Easier said than done. Mm-hmm. I don't have the solution, so I'm not going to be a problem solver. But go back to the game the other night when the Suns were in Atlanta. I forget the player involved for the Suns. There was an egregious missed call on an out-of-bounds play. It gets whistled Atlanta ball, and Suns react immediately. And Simone Jelks was the official, and you could actually hear her saying, calm down, calm down, calm down, and then gathered herself and made the correct, make the correct call. It's not that difficult.
Somebody should give you a whistle and let you give it a shot.
I've told you about my officiating experience.
I think you have.
Yeah. I ended up nearly concussed by a sorority girl officiating flag football. And that was it. That was the end of it.
Perfect. That is so perfect.
And then when a guy that I worked with got death threats left on his answering machine by a fraternity guy over a volleyball game, I was like, this might not be for me.
Yeah.
Time to find another part-time job.
That's excellent.
Coming up, one of the Valley's favorite lefties could be ruffling feathers in the golf world. We'll tell you more next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata. Dan Bickley and Vince Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Go!
Now, real quick, mentioned this in passing a little bit ago, but it looks like the Suns are going to get some help back tonight. Some more health.
Well,
Jay Crowder has missed the last six or seven games with that ankle injury, responded to a fan today, said they can't wait to see him back on the court, and he said, in all caps, your wish will be granted tonight.
Wow.
So Jay Crowder
breaking some news.
This caught everyone by surprise.
Yeah.
Kellen was like, well, he was already listed as out for tonight's game, so that'll be interesting. I guess the up 2:30 will be the official injury report, but...
Well, that should provide a lift, I would think.
Especially with Cam Johnson struggling, they needed that.
And Cam Johnson on the injury list himself, too, so we don't know what his status is.
Abdul Nader just sent out forever?
Well, he had surgery, so.
Yeah.
Well, and you've got Torrey Craig now.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Underrated move.
Yeah. So that's good. So, yes. So the return of Jay Crowder hopefully will make, sort of normalize, settle things a little bit. That's... Mm. I'm glad to hear that.
Yes, I am too.
That's really good.
All right. I know there's been talk about, we've been talking about this Super League over in Europe, European football. There's been talk of a Super Golf League, the Premier Golf League for years and years, and it won't go away.
No.
Tell me more about this.
Okay, here's why I think this is important right now, because by all accounts, the PGA Tour and the sport of golf and the golf industry, they've been painted as big winners because of the pandemic, and it really led to a grassroots revival, a lot of people getting out and playing golf and all that stuff. So everything about golf has been trending upward over the past year.
Mm-hmm.
This Super League idea came out of nowhere, and it kind of died away a little bit, and suddenly, out of the blue, about 2 weeks ago, the PGA Tour announced that they were creating a $40 million, basically a slush fund, $40 million account that they're going to use to distribute basically a guaranteed money to players who move the meter in golf. And you ask who those players are, well, it's pretty obvious. Phil Mickelson, Bryson DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler, maybe Patrick Reed, Brooks Koepka, maybe. You know who it is.
Jazz Jananwanawan.
So there are guys that move the meter in golf, a handful of them,
uh-huh.
and then a whole bunch of them who don't. All right.
Yeah.
So people are like, why? How? First of all, how did the PGA Tour just find $40 million like that?
Especially coming out of a pandemic where they didn't really have fans.
Yeah. And so it tipped off people that, okay, something they're trying to get out ahead of this. Well, turns out now that Phil Mickelson is really one of the key drivers of this. About a Super League going forward, because Phil Mickelson is a draw, big draw. And this Super League is apparently thinking of paying the golfers about $100 million for the top guys. $100 million. Phil Mickelson is 51 years of age. He is kind of, he's a wrecking ball force on the seniors tour, but a threat to win on the PGA Tour. maybe once or twice a year now.
Had a good first round yesterday.
Yeah, no, this is a good week for him. But he's not that guy anymore. So he's looking at this going, this is perfect for me. Now, you know what I mean? Yeah. Now factor in Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods could sign up to this thing and come back when he's ready to guaranteed money. So those two guys could be fueling this whole thing to the point where the PGA Tour is like, uh-oh.
But does this thing fall on its face if Tiger Woods is your main draw? And we don't even know what Tiger Woods' long-term prognosis is.
I don't think he'd be a main draw, but I think it would be something where the prospect of Tiger Woods signing up for something like this, I think his recent car accident would enhance that, because he would have to be thinking, all right, how long is it going to be before I actually get back and win golf tournaments? And now this would be something where you practically win just by playing in terms of the money that you're getting. Now, the difference in this Super Golf League is that players don't get to dictate their schedule anymore, and that's a nice luxury for the top players. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'll play 11 times this year. I think I'll play a couple times in Hawaii.
I played that tournament, it was a little hot.
A little hot. I'll play Riviera. I'll play Pebble Beach. I'll go down to Florida. Yeah. Yeah, okay, that's cool.
All right.
The thing is, what's fueling this is this belief that these golfers who do move the meter, they know that we're carrying this entire sport on our back, and because that is indeed the case, they're trying to say, who else shows up? What other great athletes show up, move the meter, draw viewers, compete, then maybe have a bad week, miss the cut, and lose money on the deal? Don't get paid for the deal. That's their argument. Now, the golfers who've been approached by the Super League, mm-hmm. Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, Justin Rose, Henrik Stenson, Adam Scott, Ricky Fowler, Patrick Reed, all been targeted as potential guys to join this thing. Rory McIlroy has already said, not interested.
Yeah, he had a quote that said they've been talking about this and after him since 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing's developed.
Well, and here's the very heart of it, and this is why the stories like this scare me so much. When you have a sport, okay, whatever sport it is, athletes are part of a continuum. They're part of something that has historical scope. The biggest tournament in golf is what? It's the Masters. And why is it the Masters? Because there's a legacy there. Mm-hmm. There's a history there that players feel. There's status, there's money, there's all that good stuff that come with it. But there's a continuum, a historical continuum that you are a part of. You go break off and join a league like this, you break the continuum. You're not part of something that Ben Hogan was part of, that
yes,
Jack Nicklaus was
exactly.
part of.
So is that your overwhelming sentiment towards this?
I don't like this at all. I think it'd be terrible. Dreadful.
But good for the small number of golfers would cash in.
Yes, it would be. For Phil Mickelson, definitely good.
Yep. Coming up, the Suns are headed to the playoffs for the first time in a decade. But what is more likely, best case scenario or worst case scenario? We'll explore that and more in Social Studies next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.